Hello, Ivy here. This week's podcast is episode 111, and it's part 7 in our series of 13. The non-profit organisations which we are looking at today are Generation Patient and Good for Media. We'll start off with Good for Media. Good for Media is a peer mentoring campaign for older teens and young adults to share their personal stories, insights and strategies with younger teens and tweens to support their healthy engagement with technology and social media. Young people are gaining access to technology and social media at younger and younger ages. This opens up amazing new ways to play, connect, and create. But most of these platforms were not created with our best interests in mind and are filled with potential pitfalls and dilemmas that can threaten our mental health and well-being. Many of us lack adequate guidance from the adults in our lives to fully understand the risks and make informed choices. We believe in the power of peers to influence and educate each other in positive ways, and that some of the best people to help us navigate social media effectively are those that can relate to our daily experiences because they have been through it themselves. That is taken directly from the Good for Media website by way of explaining their objectives in this organisation and what they're trying to achieve and the age group that they are targeting. And the organisation is made up of young people who have been through various stages, have now put themselves in a position where they would like to advocate and advise and help other young teens. So let's have a look. Good for Media in the spotlight. There is an image on the website in this section. It is also one of the slides in the podcast video. And it shows a young girl sitting on her bed, looking down, all hunched up, as if they don't want to see the world. They're hiding away, they're sitting there, but they're crouched, and they're looking down, hair covering all of the expression on their face, you can't see. And it says so much without any words. And underneath that image, it says this: as the new school year begins, parents may be wondering how to help teens protect their mental health as they engage with peers on social media. Young people can benefit from friendships formed online, especially if they feel marginalised because of their racial, gender or sexual identity, and they can hear positive messages about those identities from friends that they made on social media, according to a recent US Surgeon General's advisory. But research also documents a variety of mental health risks for young social media users. The advisory says, such as increased anxiety, depression, and sleep disruption, more struggles with body image and self-esteem, and exposure to cyberbullying or hate-based content. Stanford's Medicine's Vicky Harrison, Program Director at the Stanford Center for Youth Mental Health and Wellbeing, spoke about the advisory and how parents can guide their teens towards healthier social media use. Why are teenagers more vulnerable than adults to mental health challenges stemming from social media use? One of the main goals of adolescence is defining your identity. Young people seek authenticity, acceptance, and validation, so they are really attuned to all the cues of their peer environment. Social media can be seen as a proxy for a peer environment, but it's full of social comparisons that are magnified and distorted by algorithms and paid content. Also, social media is often a highlight reel. People post the best versions of themselves. There's definitely a sense that everybody's got a better vacation, a better social life, a better body. Vicky, from the Stanford Medicine, says, I work with young people through the Good for Media project at our centre, who say that they have to brace themselves before scrolling to defend themselves against messages that chip away at their self-esteem. Tweens and younger teenagers sometimes have difficulty understanding the motives behind social media content, or they may have trouble discerning fact from misinformation. That's easier when you're older and have more life experience and critical thinking skills. Another problem is that social media posts can create a lasting record. If you're typing or taking pictures of something potentially embarrassing, it's not just a fleeting conversation. It's something that could be misconstrued later or could come back to haunt you. We have also created a culture where we're expected to be instantly available. For adolescents, there can be an expectation that they respond to friends right away. That adds a layer of pressure that isn't helpful or feasible. It doesn't allow time to process or reflect on experiences or conversations. What conversations should parents have with their children about social media use? What advice should they give, or limits should they set to help their teens? Vicky states on the website, I advise parents to delay or limit access to social media as long as they feel they can. The longer your brain develops and your life experiences stack up before you begin using social media, the better outcomes you're going to have. I also advise that teens gain access to social media gradually, just like other things that they get more responsibility for as they mature. It's a good idea to develop a family media plan. It doesn't have to be formal. It could be a discussion that answers key questions for your teens. Are there rules for when you're going to have access to your device? Who is paying for the device? What should you not do on your device? Where can you go for help if you get into trouble? Having those conversations up front is pretty important. Also, talk about the intention behind having a device. Parents may be rightfully concerned about respecting their teen's privacy, but it's normal and expected that you ask questions about what they are doing online, just as you want to support them with peer relationship dynamics at school. You should have periodic conversations with your kids about phone and social media use, because there's a lot to navigate in those spaces. The US Surgeon General's recent advisory includes advice for designers of social media platforms to intentionally embed safeguards for young people. How do you think that could be best accomplished? I would like to see more involvement of young people in the design of the social media platforms they use. To that end, our team, in collaboration with Stanford University's Design School, recently held a workshop on social media and youth mental health, in which local high school and college students participated as panel speakers and contributors. We discussed California's Age Appropriate Design Code Act, which will be enacted in 2024. The law calls for social media platforms to protect young people by verifying their ages, having stricter privacy settings enabled by default, minimizing tracking, and more. Other states are considering similar legislation. The big question now is how this law will be put into practice. For instance, how will age verification happen? And will the voices of young people be considered in developing those regulations? Do you want to have someone scan your face to verify your age? Do you want your parent to attest to your birth date? Or do you want a third-party vendor to verify that? And what are the potential privacy impacts of these options? One thing that came up was the tension between not limiting the social media platform's freedom to share content while also protecting people on platforms. We heard from a group of eloquent young people who feel that when it comes to most social media platforms, since algorithms already manipulate the content to create a curated experience, their health and safety should be prioritized over the platform's free speech or profit. What myths do you, as an expert in the field, encounter about young people's use of social media? That adolescents want to do whatever risky things they can. That they want to explore the depths of the internet, no matter how horrible. The reality is that young people generally want a good experience online. Many teens see social media in a nuanced way. Some feel like it's necessary, a necessary evil. And they have to be on because all their friends are there. They say they lose social currency if they aren't participating, but they don't like a lot of what they encounter. I have heard from young girls that don't want to see ads or posts about fitness and losing weight. They don't want that pressure wearing on them. They just want to have fun and connect with friends. Therefore, they are open to adults trying to step in, to put in place common sense, supportive, mutually beneficial guardrails. We've talked a lot about the drawbacks of social media. Are there ways it can help young people's mental health? A lot of young people say they look to social media to relieve stress or to laugh. They like to watch videos that make them smile or that they can laugh about with their friends. Social media can also facilitate connecting with people who you feel are like-minded, who get you and share your interests. That's really powerful for young people, especially if they feel that they're not always accepted in their offline lives. And that extract from Stanford is from an article that was featured on the 22nd of August 2023 on the Stanford Medicine for Children's Health site. And there is a link to that at the end of the article. And obviously it's on the website too, if you wish to know more or to read in more detail the full report. There are plenty of examples of various stories on the Stanford site. This is just one of many. All the summaries and images relating to an article are listed under the heading under the Spotlight tab on the website. When you click on the links, it takes you to Stanford Medicine's website, and where you will see this story and many more in detail. Good for Media Stories is another tab on the website. These are again many stories of interest, all with a summary like the previous section, and then a link to a main site with a collaborating organisation. Good for Media Curriculum is another heading on that site. And these three short paragraphs are also slides in the podcast video. And it says, our curriculum is a planning and information resource created by youth to support the mental health and well-being of young people in their relationship with social media and technology. Our curriculum shares with the audience evidence-based information, insights into our lived experiences and perspectives, as well as strategies for a healthier interaction with social media. We created this curriculum with the goal of empowering young people to draw upon their direct experiences to create their own ideas and solutions for navigating social media in a healthy, productive, and purposeful way. This next section introduces the team that work at this organisation. I will just read out a few lines from each of their bios. I've put a little bit more on each of the slides relating to each of these members of staff, but the full details are in the article. Well, I say full, 90% or so of details are in the article, and there are the rest of the information and several images for each member of staff and giving details of their background and their area of expertise. On the website, it says under this heading, we have partnered up with Stanford Psychiatry Center for Youth Mental Health and Well-being to create Good for Media, the team. We created this peer mentoring campaign to tackle the positive and negative aspects of social media. These days, kids are receiving cell phones and social media accounts much earlier than previous generations. We hope that Good for Media can support healthy social media engagement, as well as be real about what we all struggle with. First, we meet Zoe. Zoe is currently in her last year as a neurobiology major with a minor in healthcare social issues at UC San Diego. She is passionate about social justice and advocacy, especially surrounding mental health. Zoe got involved with Good for Media because so many youth use social media, and she believes it is important that they have strategies and ideas to ensure that they can use it in a way that has a positive impact on their mental health. Next up is Koa, who is a college freshman dedicated to mental health advocacy and community involvement. Koa Nathan hopes to use his lived experience to help other youth and empower them to be involved in social justice. He views social media as not just a challenge for us and this generation, but also a tool for expression and storytelling to make the world a better place. Emily. Emily is a freshman at Harvard University and is currently undeclared. She is involved with Good for Media because she wants to decrease the stigma around discussing mental health. Growing up in the Bay Area, she has become acutely aware of how much people, specifically teens and young people, need a safe space to discuss, share, and learn more about this subject. She tries to use social media in a positive way to enhance her mental health and wellness, and wants to help other kids navigate the balance between social media and overall well-being. Sonia. Sonia is a senior in high school who loves learning about mental health and how to support her peers. Although she has witnessed positive and negative effects of social media, she ultimately believes that social media has the potential to help youth build community and engage with new ideas. She enjoys working with Good for Media to promote open conversations about mental health and give youth tools to mindfully interact with social media on their own terms. Xenia is a freshman in high school who is passionate about mental health and helps the people around her. She believes that it is very important for people to connect with others and share their stories. A tool to achieve this is social media, but unfortunately, using it can have negative effects on one's day, on one's day-to-day life, in fact. Her hope is that with Good for Media, youth will be able to use media positively and have a platform to discuss mental health. Edward is a junior in high school who sees how social media and pop culture can be major players in teens' self-image. Living in an age where social media equals self-validation, Edward sees how social media can both degrade and build up someone's confidence and body security, while also being a space to have open dialogue where youth have traditionally not been able to contribute. He hopes that social media will evolve into a space where people of all walks of life feel comfortable and compelled to share their authentic self to the world. Next up is Chloe. Chloe is a sophomore in high school who is passionate about discussing and reducing stigma around mental health. Through personal experience, she understands how hard it can be to navigate the digital world, but also believes that social media can be an incredible tool for fostering meaningful connections and self-expression. She got involved with Good for Media to help other youth engage with social media in a balanced way that ultimately benefits their mental health. Jimin is a high school senior attending a US online school but residing in South Korea. With her passion for youth mental health and technology reform, she has been involved in advocacy with various youth-led organisations. She believes in the power of youth engagement and hopes to create a social media space with mindful action and consumption. As social media is a double-sided sword, we should work collectively towards a better future with social media. Lucy is currently a junior at Carlmont High School in Belmont, CA. She is planning on majoring in psychology and is incredibly passionate about mental health awareness. She strongly believes and wants to promote a good relationship between social media and mental health, especially for those younger generations who are becoming more involved in social media platforms. She has seen firsthand the possible negative effects of social media and believes it is important to spread positivity throughout these platforms. Katie. Katie is a freshman in high school that is passionate about mental health. She hopes to use her experiences to spread awareness about the connections between mental health and social media. Katie believes that when used suitably, social media brings positive things to the lives of youth by providing platforms for connection and advocacy. She is excited to work with Good for Media to provide tools that benefit youth social media usage. Vienna is currently a freshman in high school. She is passionate about mental health awareness and advocacy and is particularly interested in the intersection between mental health and social media. Vienna strives to recognise and understand the positive and negative implications of social media platforms on mental health. Since social media is a significant part of the lives of younger generations, Vienna sees Good for Media as a vehicle to help promote the good parts of social media and finds ways to combat the negative pieces. Audrey is a junior in high school from the Bay Area, California. She hopes to combine her unique perspective on technology, especially algorithmic biases, from her technology background to make social media a safer place for teens. With her mental health advocacy, Audrey hopes to have conversations with youth about imposter syndrome and self-worth. She also coded a platform named Effective Cookies, which inspires users to improve their relationships with mental health through inclusivity and empathy. Vicky. Vicky is Program Director of the Center for Youth Mental Health and Wellbeing within Stanford's Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences. She has over 20 years of experience working within the public health, education and mental health sectors, developing and managing innovative community-based programs at the local, state, national and international levels. At the centre, she develops and directs a broad portfolio of projects promoting well-being, early intervention and increased access to mental health services, particularly for young people aged 12 to 25. She is leading the technical assistance team, implementing Alcove, a first-of-its-kind integrated youth mental health model in the US, as well as building a national media and mental health initiative, partnering with the media, mental health and technology sectors to enhance the positive impact of media on youth mental health and well-being. Marilyn is the Youth Outreach Coordinator at the Stanford Center for Youth Mental Health and Wellbeing. She has spent the past 5 years working in youth development alongside under-resourced youth communities in the Bay Area. At the center, Marilyn supports our youth development and peer-to-peer programs, among them Good for Media. As an adult ally in this space, Marilyn coordinates upcoming projects, community engagement opportunities and peer-to-peer collaborations with our youth advisors. Through her time in this field, she's learned that creating spaces for youth to lead is key. To end this section of the podcast on Good for Media, I'm just going to read out about a half a dozen bullet points, each of which is the title of a research paper. On the website, there is a specific tab, a dedicated tab to research. And some of it goes back some time, but most of it is in the last 12 months to 18 months. So this is just to give you an idea of the kind of things that are there. And as I said, just the title of the research paper or research that's been done by Good for Media with the help of Stanford. So, first one, social media and youth, findings and recommendations from an investigation into teen experiences. Digital health practices, social media use, and mental well-being among teens and young adults in the US. What do others' reactions to body posting on Instagram tell us? The effects of social media comments on viewers' body image perception. Abuse and harassment driving girls off Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Is social media screen time really associated with poor adolescent mental health? A time use diary study. The influence of online images on self-harm. A qualitative study of young people aged 16 to 24. Tweens, teens, tech and mental health. Coming of age in an increasingly digital, uncertain and unequal world. I hope that you explore that particular tab on the website and hope that you find some, if not all, of the research papers of interest now or in the future. Let's move on to Generation Patient. This one took me far longer to put together than some of the recent ones. And believe me, I still left out quite a lot for you to explore on the website and on the various links. This organisation, this non-profit who received funding, one of the first things you will see when you go on the website is a banner that shows a number of young people with various abilities. And the heading is Empowering Young Adults with Chronic Medical Disabilities. I'll be interested to hear, after you've listened to this podcast and read the article, what your thoughts are on this. This is another one that stood out for me. They're all good, as you know, if you've heard me speak about them. There are one or two that really do stand out. And just from my own personal perspective, this is another. The whole way that this website is put together, the work that they do, the people that they employ, the people that they work with, you will see as I go through this. This, as I said, this is a bit longer for the second one than I would expect. But trust me, it's a very minute amount compared to what's on the website. It's to give you a feel of what the ethos and the values and the hopes and aspirations of this non-profit and what they hope to do with the money that they have received as part of their grant. So we'll start off. In January 2022, we changed our name from the Health Advocacy Summit to Generation Patient. This marked a pivotal point in our growth, as the Health Advocacy Summit was a name created during high school to signify our in-person events in just Indiana at the time. We soon grew to host events in a variety of states, including Texas, North Carolina, and California. But when we were forced to go virtual, it culminated in an opportunity to expand our impact. With that came a necessary name change to showcase how our impact evolved from events to the extension of programs and meetings. We hope you can check out the below graphic to see some ways we have organised. There is an image in the article and there is a slide showing this image. It has someone sitting in a chair, an armchair, attached to a drip, hugging a teddy. And the heading starts off, There's three parts of text, and between each of the three elements, there's arrows going from one to the other. So I'll start off with the top one, and we'll move on to the middle and go on to the third one. Chronic conditions in adolescence and young adulthood are increasing. Over 85% of children with congenital or chronic conditions now survive into adolescence, and conditions once seen only in young children are now seen beyond childhood and adolescence. Young adult patients are at a critical point in their lives and face a barrage of challenges that pose a significant threat to their livelihood, independence, and quality of life. What Generation Patient does. Generation Patient facilitates events, online programs, and advocacy initiatives for young adults living with chronic and rare conditions to ensure that they have the opportunities and resources to thrive. The values of Generation Patient. Our organisation focuses on peer support, advocacy, and access to educational information and resources as fundamental pathways to empowerment. I will try to describe this diagram. You'll be pleased to know there is a slide on it. Hopefully you will see that as I'm reading it out. And also it's in the article, you'll be able to read it in more detail. It's headed up strategy. And from that, there are three arrows, each one leading to a list of activity. The first one, direct support. 6 virtual peer support meetings per month. International virtual health advisory advocacy summits. Peer-led resources in higher education and advanced planning. The second one, or the middle one of the three, research and policy. Research in higher education, patent reform, pharmaceutical direct-to-consumer advertising on social media, representation of adolescents and young adults in clinical trials, and a downward arrow from that section leading on to roundtables, higher education and medical disabilities, young adults with inflammatory bowel diseases, peer support interventions for young adult patients, social media direct to consumer advertising. And the third arm of this image is leadership programming. And by the way, all of these are in greater detail, fine detail, on the website. So back to the third arm, leadership programming. Health Policy Scholars Program, Crohn's and Colitis Young Adults Network Fellowship Program, Inflammatory Bowel Disease Medical Student Scholars Program. A note from the founder of Generation Patient. Generation Patient was created out of my own experience living with severe ulcerative colitis since the age of 6. I was extremely ill for the majority of my childhood, and because of the severity of my disease, I was isolated from society for nearly 5 years during a crucial stage in my development. At 14, my large intestine was removed, followed by several other surgeries conducted in an attempt to give me a better quality of life. By my junior year of high school, I was finally able to go back to school full time. Unfortunately, a chronic disease is exactly that, chronic. And while my condition is not as severe as it once was, it has had lasting effects on my childhood and my life as a young adult. Your young adulthood is supposed to be the prime of your life, the time to figure out who you are and the person you want to become. But it isn't easy to form any kind of identity, to socialise or to take advantage of all the opportunities that life has to offer when you're sick and coping with the physical and emotional scars of a chronic illness. My story is long and intersectional, as are the stories of millions of other young adults living with chronic diseases. But there is the monumental hope in coming together. When I created the Health Advocacy Summit, now called Generation Patient, as a freshman in college, I did so as a way to heal and connect with my Indiana community. I did not realise the impact we would have across the country and beyond. At Generation Patient, our goal is to build a sustainable movement that will empower the voices of young adults living with chronic conditions and ensure that they are given the opportunities to and resources that they need to thrive. Thank you for your time to view our website, and we hope you will join our community. Please don't hesitate to reach out to us to become a supporter, a volunteer, or simply share your story. Sincerely, Sunaya Dave, Founder and Executive Director. Let's meet the leadership team, and then we will also meet the board of directors. And let me tell you now, all of these people are so impressive in my view. So I'll say, now counting, you may not feel the same, but I was, using my phrase I've used a few times with this series, blown away. Sunaya, Founder and Executive Director. You will see in the article and also on the screen in the podcast video photographs of all of the staff and a very small summary of their background. But again, there's a little bit more in the article and far, far more on the website against each name. So Sunaya graduated from Indiana University in May 2020. Where she majored in chronic illness advocacy as well as journalism. She created the Generation Patient and its programme, the Crohn's and Colitis Young Adults Network, to create support systems for adolescents and young adults with chronic conditions across the US and internationally. She is proud to work with a team composed entirely of young adults with chronic medical disabilities and to keep Generation Patient transparent and independent from the pharmaceutical and insurance industry. Sunaya has completed an undergraduate research fellowship with health policy at Harvard TH, School of Public Health. She has also interned at numerous places such as Pfizer Global Headquarters in Health Economics and Outcomes Research for Inflammation and Immunology. Sunaya has spoken on Capitol Hill, featured nationally on C-SPAN, and is a past contributor for US News and World Report. She has served on the Democratic National Committee Disability Policy Subcommittee, and she is part of the Midwest Comparative Effectiveness Public Advisory Council, an independent appraisal committee for the Institute for Clinical and Economic Review. Sunaya also serves on the Patient Engagement Collaborative for the FDA. She was previously a National Policy Fellow at Respectability and now serves as the youngest director on the board for the national nonprofit. Sunaya was awarded 2 academic fellowships with the Association of Healthcare Journalists for her work Shania was selected as one of the most influential teenagers in 2018 by the We Are Family Foundation, and she has been recognised as an American Association of People with Disabilities Emerging Leader in 2020. Recent works: US News and World Report articles by Shania. This is what it's like to live with ulcerative colitis. Don't Forget Us, Young Adults with Invisible Illness, Experts by Experience. Pitfalls Journalists Should Avoid When Writing About People with Disabilities. Managing This Invisible Disability in College, page 70. Next one up is Sydney Reed. Sydney, female, co-founder and operation director with Shania. Sydney is a patient advocate based in Northern California. As a teenager, Sydney was diagnosed with a rare autoimmune disease called juvenile dermatomyositis. She would later develop overlapping and secondary conditions such as lupus, Sjögren's syndrome, and postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, in brackets, POTS, P-O-T-S. You can read more about Sydney's medical journey in her article, How Doctor Delayed and Missed Diagnoses Harm Patients with Chronic and Rare Illnesses. As an undergraduate, Sydney focused her studies on humanitarian and human rights law and participated in advocacy efforts against human trafficking and violence against women. In 2016, she earned her bachelor's degree in political science with a concentration in international relations, as well as an associate degree in social and behavioural science. Sydney is currently an ambassador for the Chronic Disease Coalition and a young adult representative for the Rare Disease Legislative Advocates. In addition to her advocacy work, Sydney is a contemporary artist and digital illustrator who uses mixed media to create pieces that reflect her experiences. Our next one is Kade Johnson, who's admin and program assistant. Kade is a writer and researcher based in Philadelphia. They bring almost 10 years of administration and organizational experience to the team, as well as both lived experiences with chronic illness and academic expertise in the study of disability. After earning a bachelor's degree from Smith College with a double major in film studies and history, continued to Central European University, CEU, for a master's in gender studies. At CEU, they wrote an honours awarded thesis on disability, trauma and feminist ethics, as well as completing extensive coursework on bioethics and history of medicine. Julia Barlow, Design and Program Coordinator. Julia is a 20-year-old college student from Boston. She is studying at Bentley University and majoring in creative industries with a minor in psychology. Julia lives with multiple chronic and rare diseases and conditions. She understands just how difficult it can be to live with serious illness as a young adult and the challenges of advocating for your needs from a young age, which is why she has chosen to use her artistic talent to help spread awareness. Gabrielle. Gabrielle is a college student from California and is a research and resource development. She is a third year at Colorado State University, studying interior architecture and design, construction management, and design thinking. She is the president of the American Society of Interior Design at CSU, one of the nation's largest and most accomplished student chapters. After she graduates, she plans to pursue a master's degree in healthcare administration and construction management. At the age of 12, Gabby was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis and subsequently visceral hyperalgesia. My apologies about that. Since then, she has battled various other forms of chronic pain and health challenges. Her experiences as a patient and a long-standing love of design sparked her initial interest in healthcare interior design, which has now evolved into a passion for healthcare facility planning and construction. She champions for the utilisation of integrated project delivery in healthcare construction in order to integrate all stakeholders, including patients, into the building process as much as possible. Last year, she served as the undergraduate intern for the Planning, Design and Construction Department at Stanford Healthcare. She brings a unique viewpoint to the industry, utilising her experiences as a patient and her education in the building industry to find ways to better serve patients, visitors and providers. Next up is Amy. Amy is a patient advocate from California. Her lived experiences with ulcerative colitis and chronic illness has led her to Generation Patient, where she spearheads our higher education initiatives and aims to increase representation, access and support for students with chronic medical disabilities. Amy graduated from UCLA's Honors Program with a BA in Political Science and a minor in disability studies, and subsequently earned an MS in community health and prevention research at Stanford Medicine. Amy's passion for patient empowerment has fueled her academic and professional endeavours, and she's currently an MD candidate at Stanford University School of Medicine. Leah, project coordinator for the Crohn's and Colitis Young Adult Network. Leah is a second year PhD student at the University of Michigan, studying nuclear engineering. Besides studying science, she enjoys travelling, going to concerts with her friends, movies, biking and making art. Leah is also very passionate about science advocacy and science policy, particularly nuclear policy. With her doctorate degree, she plans to work in or with the government in this field. She frequently advocates for women and minorities in STEM, focusing on communication and workshops. Along with science advocacy, she is also an advocate for something that hits closer to home, her Crohn's disease. Leah was diagnosed with Crohn's disease at the age of 12. And now that she is approaching her 24th birthday, she has spent almost half of her life battling the illness. Currently on Remicade, she is never shy to share her struggles with Crohn's and her journey for remission. She has been involved in many organisations that support this disease, such as being a camper and a counsellor for the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation Camp Oasis for the past 10 years. A patient advocate for Patients for Affordable Drugs and a fellowship mentor for the Crohn's and Colitis Young Adult Network's fellowship program. Erin, program coordinator for the Crohn's and Colitis Young Adults Network. Erin is a returning student at the University of Wisconsin Madison studying dietetics. She first graduated in 2018 with a Bachelor's in Human Development and Family Studies and Biology, believing she would pursue a career in healthcare. Erin realised her true passion for nutrition and disease, eventually embracing her textbooks once again to finish the didactic programme in dietetics with the goal of becoming a registered dietitian nutritionist. Erin was diagnosed with Crohn's disease when she was just starting high school at 14 years old and has undergone Remicade infusions to control her disease. It was through her struggles with Crohn's that she realised her interest in healthcare and nutrition. Since then, she has dedicated her academic career to learning more about the physiology, health, nutrition and wellness. She currently works as a hospital dietary clerk, helping patients order food that align with their diet restrictions. She also enjoys just about any creative outlet, camping with her family in Wisconsin and cooking up new health recipes from scratch. Erin was a 2019 fellow for the Crohn's and Colitis Young Adults Network, spreading awareness through the young adult community about living with inflammatory bowel disease. Erin struggled with self-confidence and her identity with Crohn's disease for years after she was diagnosed. So she is focused on helping young people accept themselves by accepting their disease. She uses creativity to show her passion for health and digestive disease by writing articles for the fellowship and will be continuing with this non-profit organisation in 2021. The Board of Directors. Barbara, MD, Harvard Medical School. Barbara is the faculty director of the Multi-Regional Clinical Trial Centre of Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard, the MRCT Centre, Professor of Medicine, Harvard Medical School and Brigham and Women's Hospital, Boston, and a hematologist-oncologist. She's also the director of the Regulatory Foundation's Ethics and Law Programme of the Harvard Clinical and Translational Science Centre and the Director of Regulatory Policy. There are several more job roles that I'm not going to read out here because I'll be boring you, but I strongly recommend that you read through them because it gives you an overall view and impression of the staff that work there and the collaborations that they have with various organisations and the quality of those organisations and the help that they are, no doubt, and the difference they are making in their communities. Stephen Plank, the Annie E. Casey Foundation, as the Vice President of Research, Evaluation, Evidence and Data at the Annie E. Casey Foundation, Stephen balances several responsibilities. These include advancing evidence-based practices, commissioning social policy research, overseeing evaluations of CASEY programs and initiatives, supporting innovative research methodologies and data resources, and building local capacity to produce and use data to inform programs, planning and policy reform. Kevin Corcoran, Lumina Foundation. Kevin leads communication strategy and outreach for Lumina Foundation, an independent private foundation in Indianapolis that is committed to making opportunities for learning beyond high school available to all. Before assuming this role in 2016, he directed a multi-state effort for the foundation to rethink higher education, business and finance models, and craft-related public policy principles rooted in non-partisan research and analysis. Pratima Prasad, American Cancer Society. Pratima is the Regional Director of Philanthropy for the Greater New York City Area at the American Cancer Society, where she specialises in donor partnerships, related to health and social justice programs, specifically health, access and equity. Pratima has 15 years of experience working within the New York City healthcare space on a variety of fronts. She began her career at major NYC academic medical centers, New York Presbyterian and Hospital for Special Surgery, while working on healthcare operations and various fundraising campaigns. Leah Clark, McAllister and Quinn. Leah serves as a senior research analyst for the Advanced Technology, Defense and Homeland Security Practice. In this role, Leah assists for managing directors and team through research and development for technical-based clients. She provides analytical and managerial support in grant-seeking strategies and government relations projects for clients. Apart from engagement with the scientific community, she has also spent several years advocating for patients with chronic illnesses and for improvements in healthcare through non-profit and for-profit spaces. She is a program director for a non-profit organization centered on improving the lives of young adults with inflammatory bowel disease and has mentored 25 fellows, including 10 international fellows, over the past 3 years of the program. She has also served as a customer service and social media manager for the Mark Cuban Cost Plus Drug Company and focused on communication with patients for their affordable medication needs. And you've heard me speak about this lady earlier on in this podcast, Shania Davey. Shania graduated from Indiana University in May 2020, where she majored in chronic illness advocacy as well as journalism. She created Generation Patient and its program, the Crohn's and Colitis Young Adults Network, to create support systems for adolescents and young adults with chronic conditions across the US and internationally. Lot more detail on Shania, as you would expect, as we're looking at patient generation, or generation patient, I should say, excuse me. This next section, collaborations, I'm not going to read it out. There are lots of logos of organisations who are working with Generation Patient, and on the website and in the article, because I've put the links there, when you click on the logo, it takes you through to that organisation. So, for example, Harvard Medical School is there, Perelman School of Medicine is there, Aspen Ideas Festival is another, American College Health Association. In a number of the tabs on the website, it refers to virtual meetings. And I've just put a few lines from that website. Since March 2020, we have facilitated over 450 virtual meetings for young adults with chronic and rare conditions. To keep this a safe space for our community, all meetings are exclusively for young adult patients. Our policy forums, roundtables and other events are open to everyone unless otherwise noted. And there is an email, details given at the end of this section on virtual meetings. If you have any questions to ask or any information that you want about how that works and how to go about it. And I've put that in the article as well. And they've made a point of saying, please note that these meetings should not be considered therapy and are just a safe space for young adult patients to meet each other. If you have specific questions about mental health, we recommend seeking a certified mental health expert. Finally, we would like to thank Connecting to Cure Crohn's and Colitis for sponsoring a portion of our 2023 peer support meetings. And there is a calendar on the website with details of various events coming up, which you can click on each particular event and get more information. Health Advocacy Summit. In October 2017, we hosted our first health advocacy summit in Indianapolis, Indiana. This event brought together 14 attendees and 6 speakers from various demographics for a day of advocacy and leadership development. By 2020, we were planning to host summits in Indiana, Texas, California, Massachusetts, Illinois, and New York. Unfortunately, COVID-19 forced us to cancel all of our in-person summits for both 2020 and 2021. However, the global pandemic allowed us to pursue other opportunities, such as our international virtual summit, the largest virtual event created specifically for young adults with chronic and rare conditions. This event is unlike anything we've seen before and has allowed us to reach young adult patients across the globe. Moving forward, we will continue to host our international virtual summit annually and focus the development of our in-person summits within rural communities where access to the internet, resources and information is limited. The Crohn's and Colitis Young Adults Network is an international community space and fellowship program for young adults with inflammatory bowel diseases and is the only disease-specific programming at Generation Patient. The fellowship program is aimed at providing opportunities to a select group of young adults, IBD patients, many of whom have gone on to create advocacy movements of their own. The fellowship is in its fourth year, with fellows coming from all over the world, including Ethiopia, Dubai, India, Greece, Malaysia, Canada, and the US. Fellows produce monthly online content to share with our growing community of young adults with IBD for young adult IBD community. We also host 2 virtual meetings specific to young adults with IBD every month, in addition to a variety of other activities. Under their news tab on the website, number of articles, events, I'm just giving a couple here. August the 2nd, 2023. Generation Patient receives grants from Responsible Technology Youth Power Fund. Generation Patient has received a grant from the Responsible Tech Youth Power Fund for our work to increase oversight of pharmaceutical direct-to-consumer advertising on social media. Beginning in July of 2022, our team expressed our concerns regarding the increasing prevalence of direct-to-consumer advertising by pharmaceutical companies on social media platforms such as TikTok and Instagram. As the regulation is outdated to newer platforms, we recognise the urgent need to address the potential consequences and implications of direct-to-consumer advertising for our demographic. Prescription medicines advertised on social media lack appropriate safety information and disclosures, making it difficult for young patients to make informed decisions about their health. The increasing use of influencers to advertise prescription medicines also poses a great concern for the negative impact on young patients. As an organisation led entirely by young adults with chronic medical conditions, we are eager to drive young adult patient-led solutions with researchers, clinicians and public interest groups, said Sinead, Executive Director at Generation Patient. Misleading prescription drug and supplement advertisements pose an increasing challenge with the vast misinformation and disinformation, especially on TikTok and Instagram. This grant will enable us to proactively address this issue by collaborating with various representatives in the fields of technology and public health, while advocating for improved and more effective standards in the regulation of direct-to-consumer advertising. We believe that direct education, resource sharing, and peer support are our most effective tools to create pathways for young adults' patients' empowerment. This award will allow us to continue this crucial work within the social media landscape. From Generation Patient, and also we'll bring this podcast to a close, is this. Generation Patient is a US-based and internationally connected non-profit organisation created and led by young adults with chronic conditions. We are the largest organisation representing adolescents and young adults with chronic conditions through our peer support initiatives, community building and systems advocacy. Our independence is important to us, and we do not accept funding from the private healthcare industry and are supported by philanthropic foundations. End of quote. And as we all know, on the slide that shows you all the foundations who supplied the funding for this Responsible Technology Youth Power Fund, Arterial Foundation is one of those. So, that's it for this week. And as usual, I look forward to your comments in the next few days and see what you think. So, it's bye from me. Bye from Ivy. Bye.